skills like preaching, but only until recently, very little training of the heart. Like when I was in seminary, there was no real intense training of the heart. You may have a pastoral counseling course, something. It would just be touched upon. It's mainly the head. How to exegete, how to get your Greek and Hebrew and systematic theology, whatever. The emphasis in seminary is the head. Some in preaching skill. But the seminary's neglect, overall, it's changing a little bit. The most important thing, and that's the heart. Where the heart is, the head's going to follow. And so Andrew says his priority, and I am his student, total in agreement. Seminary, mission, church, number one thing, intimacy with God. Doesn't matter how intelligent you are, how spiritually gifted you are. You, me, we need the first thing, and that's intimacy with God. Right? If you have leadership in the church, they need to know how God is feeling and thinking. How are you going to get there without intimacy with God? So intimacy. Then second, character. Your character. Your integrity, your honesty, your humility. Third, knowledge. Knowledge is important. We don't want ignorant people. We don't know. We want people who are informed. And then fourth, it's ministry. And so that hit me, and I thought, you know what? And I hate putting Andrew on the spot, but one of the things that really grips me again and again is that while he was in prison, the biggest battle he fought was his love for God. Like for the normal human being, if you're sick in the hospital, you want to get well. If you're a student and you're failing, you want to pass the class. If you're in prison, you want to get out. Okay? Not that he didn't think about it. He thought about it. But the real battle was his heart for the Lord. And so that core message really hit me this time around. I haven't shared that with him, but that was like, my goodness, that is so important. Here's an analogy. So on September 18th, before I flew out, me and Suzanne flew out in the afternoon to Jordan, I had to go to the doctor to get my blood and urine test for my annual checkup. So on the 18th in the morning, drew up blood. And then after I got back, October 1st, the following day, October 2nd, I had my physical. So this past week, I went to the doctor. And he went through all the thing. And in short, I have never been this healthy in decades, okay? Okay, wait a minute. Okay, I'm not, okay? So he's showing me the number. Like 2 years ago, I don't know what the numbers mean actually, but I'm just going to give you a scale. 2 years ago, my triglycerides were 319. At its height was 400. That sounds bad. I mean, right? Does that sound bad? Okay, that sounds bad. 300 of anything sounds bad. 300 pounds is bad. I mean, everything 300, like, that is bad. This time, 99. Wow. 319 to 99. My cholesterol's all the numbers went down. All the sugars went down. And I'm thanking Jesus for the bicycling. That's what it was. And here's an analogy. Physically, we can assess our heart's condition. Like physically, you could test for cholesterol, triglycerides, sugar, and through those tests, the doctors can inform you how your heart health is. They can measure the health of your kidneys, liver, all these functions. Okay. So that's true of the physical heart. Okay. Question: is it possible to measure the health of your spiritual heart? Is it possible? Is there such a thing as health of the spiritual heart? Of course. There is such thing as spiritual heart health. And for believers, it's related to our love for God. Your love for God is equal to your spiritual health. Okay? And so I believe every person here, including the young, especially the young, we need to be mindful of our heart's condition. Okay? And so I have two passages for us to look at, but the first one is actually in the New Testament. The main text is going to be Psalm 27, but I want us to start with Matthew 22, verses 34 to 40. Okay, so according to Jewish tradition, guess how many commandments are there in the Torah, the first five books of the Bible? How many commandments? Any wild guesses here? Don't Google, okay? Just tell me. 300? More than 300? 613, okay? According to Jewish tradition, depends on how you count, 613 commandments, okay? Now, the question is there a way to sum up these commandments, or are they all random of equal value? Is there like an organizing principle to these commandments? Okay? And the answer is yes, okay? And so in this passage, hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the Torah, the law, tested him with this question. Teacher, which is the greatest in the law? Of the 613, Yeshua, which is the greatest? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. And so he's saying, look, listen, here are the commandments in a nutshell. Okay? Here's the organizing principle. If you get this, all the other commandments will fall under. Okay? To love the Lord thy God with all of your heart, soul, strength, and mind. And to love your neighbor as yourself. Upon these, the law and the prophets, the rest of it hang together. Hang on these two commandments. Okay. Now, as New Testament believers in Yeshua, that doesn't change. Old Testament Torah and with Jesus, that does not change. Now, there's an added commandment, so to speak, the Great Commission. All authority in the heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, in going, make disciples. But that doesn't replace the greatest commandment. And when I thought about the greatest commandment, it's a way of saying, which commandment in the Bible is the most important? Okay. The greatest is the most important. And that is to love the Lord with all that you are. Okay, that's it. And this is true for anyone who can understand what I'm saying. Whether you're 10 years old, or 80 years old, 90 years old, or in between. Okay? It's not seasonal. It's the commandment for every season, every mountain and valley of your life. Okay? And so, how do we do it? What is it and how do we do it? And the person I think about in relationship to this commandment is David, right? So Saul the king is failing, and Yahweh tells Samuel, I have chosen someone else, and the qualification for this person is he's a man after my own heart. That's the only qualification that's highlighted for the new king. Not his height, intelligence, looks, family connection, political connection, political savvy, political skills. None of that is ever mentioned. It's just one thing. And it's sort of a contrast. Unlike Saul, this king, this person, is a man after my own heart. Question, when did David develop this heart for God? Answer, well before the age of 15. Because Samuel anoints David when he's about 15. God says of David at the age of 15, he's a man, young boy. He's a boy who is after my own heart. And so we know David developed a heart for God as a teenager, developmentally speaking. Of course, culturally speaking, what it means to be a teen is different, of course. But developmentally, perhaps when he was like 9 years old or 8 years old, listening to the Torah and the story, he's developing a heart after God as a boy. He didn't develop it as a 20-year-old. He was already identified when he was 15 to be king. He's a man, young boy, young person after my own heart. And so that characterizes David. Now the question is, when did he pursue God? When was he after God's own heart? Answer is, all the time. Even in circumstances where you would not think, David, you should be pursuing after God's own heart. And so that's where I want to pick up Psalm 27. This is just an example. There are other psalms like this, okay? So I want us to look at Psalm 27. And basically, young people, if David could do it as a 13-year-old, 12-year-old, you can do it at that same age. Even Benjamin. Benjamin, how old are you? 11. Okay, you qualify. Who's the youngest person here right now? Is it Benjamin? Okay, Benjamin, you qualify. David writes, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked advance against me to devour me, it is my enemies and my foes who will stumble and fall. Though an army besiege me, and my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then I will be confident. One thing I ask from the Lord, this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. For in the day of trouble, he will keep me safe in his dwelling. He will hide me in the shelter of his sacred tent and set me high upon a rock. Then my head will be exalted above the enemies who surround me. At his sacred tent, I will sacrifice with shouts of joy. I will sing and make music to the Lord. Hear my voice when I call, Lord. Be merciful to me and answer me. My heart says of you, seek his face. Your face, Lord, I will seek. Do not hide your face from me. Do not turn your servant away in anger. You have been my helper. Do not reject me or forsake me, God my Savior. Though my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will receive me. Teach me your way, Lord. Lead me in a straight path because of my oppressors. Do not turn me over to the desire of my foes, for false witnesses rise up against me, spouting malicious accusations. I remain confident of this. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord." It's an unusual sort of composition. For David, seeking the Lord wasn't in the sort of the safety, security, comfort like this. You know, Sunday afternoon, a little bit of sacrifice because watching the Commanders are playing. Thank you, Mike. And then it's not like that. It's not when things are taken care of, the kids are behaving, and you got your work done, the lawn is mowed, and everything is nice and quiet, and now you drive to church and go, oh, I'm going to seek the Lord. For David, that would have been nice. But from 15, 16, Goliath, after he's anointed, David is more or less on the run all the time. He doesn't become king until he's 30. 0 to 15, then 15 to 30, his life is hard. His own king is trying to kill him. And there are occasions when David had the opportunity to kill Saul. And then David refrains, I'm not going to hurt the Lord's anointed. And he'll say, hey, Saul, I got the hem of your garment while you were doing number two. But hey, I'm not going to hurt you, man. Read that account. You know, I mean, people had to relieve themselves in the ancient world too, one time. So here is pursued by his own king, by his own people. But in the midst of amazingly, here's the point, amazingly stressful life, and there is no stress like someone who's trying to kill you. That's like stress way up there. Feeling your organic chemistry, that's nothing. Like someone's trying to kill you, and they're like right there. That's like tremendous stress. But even under those circumstances, David is seeking God's face. For him, seeking God's face is in the fabric of everyday, especially stressful life. It's not divorce. It's not like contemplation. It's like, Lord, the enemies surround me. Therefore, I'm going to seek your face because you're the source of my help. You are the one I need. I delight in you. Like, it's an unusual place to worship. But when we think about it, pray about it, it makes the world, it makes sense. It really does make sense. It makes sense because without him seeking God, he will be psychologically, emotionally, spiritually destroyed. As a young man, he will be crushed. He's got to find some strength to his life and some hope for his life. He knows he's been anointed king, and at the same time, from a human standpoint, there's no signs that he's ever going to be king. So without God, without him spending time seeking God, his life will be destroyed. He would just say, I'm going to quit this game, delete, escape. I can't deal with this. But he doesn't. So the Psalms are filled with these kinds of, you know, descriptions. The enemies are pursuing me. My life is difficult, Lord. But therefore, I seek you. I seek your face. My heart says, seek his face. Seek the face of Yahweh. That's the great commandment, to love the Lord thy God with all of your heart, soul, strength, and mind. And so it's a tremendous story in David. He's not a perfect person. But given his imperfections and brokenness, nevertheless, he achieved amazing things in his life through God. But also on his part, through seeking God. And as I reflected, I realized for many of us, including myself, there are parts of the Christian walk that doesn't fully make sense until this thing, the greatest commandment, really is the greatest commandment. Okay? Something like obedience, like obeying God even though you don't like it. That won't make sense unless God is number one. Unless your heart is to please him. Not my will, but your will be done. Only a person who's submitted to loving God fully can say, I know what it means to obey because of my love. If you don't have God number one, then you will negotiate. You will struggle. You go, you know what? You will be the Lord of your life. You're going to pick and choose which commandments you want to obey and which one you want to avoid. Because it's inconvenient, it's uncomfortable, it hurts your ego, whatever. You're going to choose. But if you're totally submitted to the Lord in love, then obedience will make sense. Not my will, but your will be done. Not my agenda, your agenda. Because bottom line, Lord, even though I don't understand why you're asking me, I love you and I trust you. So I'm going to submit, Lord. Even though it hurts my ego, even though it's the timing isn't right, I just submit my heart, my will, to you. And so that only makes sense if Jesus, if the Lord, if the Father is clearly number one in your life, if that's your number one driving force in life, that's it. Right? I remember I've had really wonderful conversation with Suzanne's dad, and one of it was in the parking lot, and his ministry in Oakland is hard. It's hard because just the signage, okay, is Jesus Saves. Okay, if you see a church that says on the front, Jesus Saved, that's a hard ministry. In the inner city of Oakland, in front is the rapid transit system, chain link fence, rough neighborhood. The sign says Jesus Saves. So we're in the parking lot, and I'm just asking her father, Suzanne's dad, about ministry and calling. And he says, you know, John, the Lord has called me here to serve. I'm going to serve and I'm going to die here. There was no reason for that dramatic. He was just simply stating, right? In his life, he simply wanted to be obedient to the Lord's assignment. And then he said, John, I actually have gotten a lot of invitations because he's highly educated, you know, PhD in biochemistry, the number one student in Korea, full scholarship to Seoul. He's like famous. His friends are like the president of Korean Airline, ambassadors. Another colleague was, you know, MD, PhD, BU. And everyone wondered, the non-Christian, like, whatever happened to him? Like, and his answer is, I found Jesus. And so everything was submitted in complete obedience. And he felt that his calling was to serve the Lord in their inner city. Okay? And then after he would retire, he actually wanted to open up a prayer mountain in Mexico because it was cheaper than the U.S. Okay? All right? And so he said, oh, John, I've gotten a lot of invitations from big churches in the suburbs, but I always say no because God has called me. And not only does complete obedience make sense, but there's complete clarity. If you love the Lord with all your heart, soul, and mind, you will have clarity about your life, your life purpose. Okay? Utter clarity, and therefore he was never tempted. I was saying, Pastor, it is so hard here. The ministry is so hard. I was saying, like, indirectly, so to speak. I had the same conversation with Suzanne's mom in Japantown eating udon. Similar conversation because for me, when I visited Suzanne, it was a shock. It was a shock visiting her home. They were so poor. It was a shock, And here are Suzanne's parents, well-educated. If they wanted, they could have easily gotten on the phone or said yes to the invitation and lived in an upper-middle-class neighborhood like a Bethesda here, be a pastor of a nice church, and have a comfortable life. But they didn't. Because it wasn't about comforts of life. It was about obedience to the Lord, no matter the calling. It wasn't about status. It was about loving the Lord thy God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And that included complete obedience. That was it. And there was clarity and there was peace. No second guessing, complete peace. God has called me here. I'm going to serve him here and I'm going to die here. He said, I'm going to die here. And he did. But he was a man of complete contentment. Why was that? Because he loved the Lord thy God with all of his heart, soul, strength, and mind. No second guessing. No regret. And so after he retired, he was always excited about what God was doing around the world. So at that time, I was going to Africa, and when I met him, he said, John, what's happening in Africa? I would tell him, oh, that's good, that's good. You know, and it's funny. He had some funny advice, really wise advice. He said, John, you should think about, basically, this is my interpretation of what he was saying. You should go to places where God is really working and where God is raising up leaders. Like, take advantage of where the Holy Spirit is moving and where God is working and raise them up Because he was also very kingdom-minded. He was thinking about impact. Okay. But I would share with him what was going on. His face will light up like a kid on Christmas. Like, oh. And then he was so proud. My daughter's in ministry. My son. My son-in-law. And like his joy. The kingdom joy was his personal joy. Okay? And so when a person loves the Lord thy God with all of his heart, soul, and mind, there is no boundary between personal joy and ministry joy. Like, your own personal joy is God advancing. And that's been true for my life here, ministry here, and for Suzanne. When we travel, her greatest time, okay, in her life right now is ministering with me, okay? I'm not making it up. That's what she's told me. She said that many, many times. She said, John, this is my greatest joy, ministering with you. I don't argue with that. I go, oh, okay. But it's not me. It's not me, of course. It's not like, hey, hanging out with you. Because we hang out together at home all the time. You know what she's saying? And someone, I love seeing what God is doing with you, my husband. Whereas if I go and tell her, she could only kind of hear, oh, that was God. But then when we're both together and meet the crazy Bedouin or the Turkmen and go, and the Egyptians or whatever, it's like, wow! We are seeing God at work with both of our eyes. So that's at the level of personal joy. Our personal joy for both of us is seeing God transform lives. And that's true here at the church. You don't know how excited Suzanne gets talking about the little kids. She knows everything about the little kids. Like, her personal joy is when a little kid here, I'm not going to highlight names, and the rest of you will get jealous of it, okay? So, but all the kids are beautiful here, all right? But when, for example, like, you know, Thailand, okay, Sean and Elliot drew, like, prophetic pictures. They drew pictures and we shared it. When our young, and I'm possessive, when our kids hear the Lord and release it, that's like personal joy. It's not like, oh, I'm just joyful with John and Serena. That's not it. I'm joyful when they're doing well, but when our kids do well here, that's personal joy. And so what happens is when we love the Lord thy God with all, then the things that God loves become the things that I love. My heart is wedded to the heart of the Father. When God moves, when God loves people and his own glory and his and the kingdom advances, that's at the level of personal joy. But if I don't love the Lord with all of my heart, oh, then that becomes, oh, you know, church joy or ministry. And then I have my own personal. No, at this stage, everything is bleeding over. There's no boundary. Okay? And so then what happens? When we love the Lord thy God with all of our heart, soul, and strength, then we naturally, without pressure, external pressure, our hearts naturally long for what God longs for. When our hearts are aligned with the Father, what He desires, we naturally desire. When He has compassion, and I naturally, you know. And that's true. I know that's true with Andrew and Noreen and Bob and Heidi and Akil and Linda and Travis too. Like, your heart is just married to the heart of the Father. And when there is His heart display and people get healed, you just feel like dancing. I mean, this young man, he was, on Friday I shared a little bit, he's kicked out of his home, 16 years old, thinking of death, how to kill himself. Small group of evangelists came and said, hey, Jesus loves you, why don't you give it a shot, talk to Jesus. And so we meet him. And I can just kind of imagine what kind of hard life he had. And to hear that, you just want to dance. You want to tap dance. You want to skip. And that elation comes about because your heart is in tune and attuned to the heart of the Father. And so here's a takeaway message for all of us, especially the young youth group kids. One, life is hard. Hey, what's so funny? Someone disagree? Okay, young people, raise your hand. Okay. Is life hard? Raise your hand. Okay. Okay. Grace, no cheating. Okay. No, life is hard for a young person. Life is hard. Life is hard. My advice for the young people and everybody else, don't focus on the hardness of life. Don't focus on your friends at school. Don't focus on schoolwork. Okay, Grace, you got to listen to me. Don't focus on schoolwork. Focus on loving God. Focus on loving God. Every person, no matter what you're doing, focus on loving God. No matter what you're doing in your career, spend time loving the Lord. And don't think of it as disconnected to your life. No, no. Where your heart is, that's where your treasure is. Your treasure has to be in God Himself, because He's the ultimate source for your life, the blessings of your life. And so, naturally, whatever we think about, we're going to magnify that in our mind and in our emotion. And so there's only one person that is worthy of our magnification, and that's the living God. I'm not saying put your head in the sand. Like David, he knows realistically what's going on. And he's pretty realistic. Like, kill them enemies. I mean, he's pretty raw with how he's feeling. And so, when you focus on the Lord, magnify Him by loving Him fully, then you will get the strength and the resource and the hope and power to overcome all your challenges, including schoolwork and anxiety. Okay, this is a message for me. Like, don't highlight your sickness. If you're sick, don't highlight it. If you're in prison, don't highlight it. If enemies are after you, don't highlight it. Highlight God. God knows your situation. Bring those issues up as prayer, but then worship the Lord. Okay? And the person who really develops this well is Andrew, you know. And people who've battled to love the Lord. So especially when you're having a hard time, worship the Lord. I love you, Father. Okay, now we're going to have a little ministry time. The kids are here too, okay? And then we're going to go into the Lord's Supper. Okay, and so this is how we're going to ministry time. All the youth group kids, you're going to get together, maybe in two groups, okay? And so our ministry time to one another before we go into the Lord's Supper is this. You're going to say either of two things, okay? I'm just going to ask you to just be honest, okay? And this is a prayer that I got from Andrew. And the first one goes like this. Lord, I don't love you with all my heart. When I think about my heart, it's my assessment is, Lord, I don't love you with all of my heart, soul, and strength. But I pray that you would help me. You would help me to love you with all of my heart, soul, and strength. That's one prayer. Maybe a few of you, in all honesty, you could say, Lord, I've been loving you with all my heart, soul, and strength. Help me to continue. Okay, that's it. Help me to continue. Prayers are powerful. He's not asking us to fix it. Okay, He's not. But I think this sincere prayer, honest prayer, God will answer. Okay, so youth, just get into like two groups, and adults, maybe groups of two or three, just share. Okay, either of those two. Don't go real long. You could just kind of share. You know, in prayer, I have not loved the Lord with all of my heart, soul, and strength. And so I'm going to pray that, okay? Just share that, either of those two. It won't take that long, you know. Just two prayers. If you've been loving the Lord with all your heart, soul, and strength, okay? Okay, Akil and Linda, that's unfair. So Tom, you go. Yeah, go with them, you know. We can't just have husband and wife, you know. We got to have people. Okay. Two, three people. Just share a little bit and just pray then. Pray then. Yeah, Mia, why don't you go with Heidi? Yeah. And then you guys could just pray for each other after you share that.